Welcome to the Wang Bennett's Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now, here's your host, Wang Bennett.
Welcome to Wang Bennett's Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Bennett, and it's December the 27th, 2023. This is episode 124. Today, we have a young man. It's a businessman. He's a two-time All-American wrestler from Liberty University and a former Shady Spring Tiger, Mr. Cody Richmond. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Wayne.
There was a William Cody Richmond that was one of the first settlers in Raleigh County. Obviously, you're not him, but is your family a relation to this guy? You ever heard of him?
I actually have no idea, but if you can help me out and give me some more detail, I'd actually like to look into that now.
Well, I kind of figured like Richmond District and all that area might have been named after the guy, but he supposed to been the first settler. But did you grow up on a farm or you have a farm?
We have farmland. Family just lives in a normal house, but we have farmland that we've basically farmed ever since I was young. But whenever I was a young kid, my grandparents slowly started getting out of the farming business and just focusing on, granddad had worked for the power company. My other granddad, who had passed away and kind of plays into my story, he was a ex-military and former government with the National Mine Academy out in Grandview.
Uh-huh.
And then both my grandmothers, the one was just the farm wife. Then the other one's just a former bus driver who was just active in her church. So all I did growing up was essentially just baling hay and riding horses.
Have you ever thought about continuing doing that as an adult?
It'd be too much of a startup cost, or I'd have to start working on a farm. And where I'm at in Lynchburg, Virginia now, there's no big farms where they're making a killing. Every time I talk to a farmer, unless they are a massive, massive 100-acre farm, everyone's just basically cutting even. No one's making a living. They're just cutting even.
Yeah. That makes, now, you had an uncle, Frank, that was a basketball player, right?
That's my granddad.
Is that your granddad?
That's my dad's dad, yes.
Okay. I remember watching him play basketball at Beckley College, I think, and he played the open basketball league for West Virginia Glass, I think, and pretty good ball player. Did your dad ever play any ball?
I think he did in middle school, but when he got to high school, he focused on helping on the farm.
Uh-huh. Now, he does a little contracting work too, doesn't he?
Yeah, gutters.
I took a class through West Virginia Extension Office and Master Gardener's class,
yeah.
And I think your dad taught that. He did a great job.
A lot of people say that. He's one of the – I know at one point he was covering, I think, three counties. He was Summers County, Raleigh County, and he was helping oversee another. So – and all of it was for his extension classes. People just enjoyed the way that he taught. So, I mean, he used to be a teacher before he became an agricultural agent. So
it was one class I really looked forward to. You know, we met every week and then we would go out on site sometimes and do some things. And something really, really proud of. Now, how old were you when you started into sports?
So, well, let me go back real quick. I got a cool little fact. So my granddad that passed away, the one that kind of played into my story the last time that me and you talked, he played on the same basketball team as Papa Frank.
Really?
So both my granddads were teammates together in college.
I'm darn. Now you're talking about Ron Chambers.
Yes. They are both basketball players at Beckley College.
I'm darn.
But Papa Ron ended up going military. So I think they were teammates for one, maybe 2 years.
Now, I don't get too many requests. Well, let's how old were you when you started sports?
I've always been in sports ever since I was young. T-ball, football. I mean, probably 3-4 years old, I've been doing sports. Just really wasn't the best at any of them. I mean, I played. That's the best I can say. I played. I was a pudgy little kid. So, I mean, they just put me on the field as a body more than half the time.
But now when you got in middle school, were you wrestling at that time?
No. So I actually tried out for basketball in sixth grade, got cut, tried out again in seventh grade, got cut again. And one of my friends who I'd been friends with since I think, first or second grade at Daniels, Tyler Cossett. He used to wrestle at Shea Spring. Tyler just one time was just like, hey, come out for wrestling. That's kind of where it all took off.
I'll be darned.
It's kind of just stuck with it.
Now, did you play football?
I played football up until my senior year, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, who was the wrestling coach at that time in middle school?
It was Matt Huffman and Coach Metter.
Okay. And now I think Nick's still there. Now, I usually don't take requests, but somebody wanted me to ask you about Bill Lester's anvil.
Oh, don't worry. I'll handle that after this podcast is done. Wow.
I don't want to. We don't want to talk about that on the podcast.
I'll call Jeff when I get done.
Okay. And so when you got in high school, was Dix Manning still? No, he'd already gone. He had been gone. Yeah, you Jeff Lester, I guess, was your coach.
So Dix was alive, but he was no longer the coach. I only met him twice, and that was my 8th grade and 9th grade year, and then he passed away. I want to say a couple months, what would eventually become the Dix Manning duels. We would always have a late season duel tournament between a lot of the local teams in, you know, February, right before conference and regionals. And Dix was there one year, freshman year, and that was about the last time I saw him. But yeah, coach wise, my freshman year, it was Jeff Lester. And then I want to say it may have been Jeff Lester again my sophomore year. But then by the end of my school year, it was Larry Ransom and Derek Scarborough.
And what was the last weight class that you wrestled? 162 or?
I was 152 in high school.
152.
I started at 160, and I looking back, sometimes I'm conflicted on this because I had more success at 160. I felt like I could have also had a little bit more personal success, but 152 was the more loaded weight class at the time. I mean, every person in that weight class my senior year was an NHSCA All-American at least some point in their career. Then multi-time national, there was a couple national champions, multi-time All-Americans. So, I mean, it was just a loaded weight class on top of guys who were multi-time state champions across the weight class. I wanted the challenge, so I went 152.
Most people look the other way. They try to get out of the weight class.
No, I liked the challenge. I was really confident in thinking that I could beat a lot of the guys. And there was a few of the guys that I gave matches to. I just, you know, obviously none of it ever came to fruition. So
there was Noah Adams wrestling around at that time.
He was a freshman at 152 whenever I was a senior at 152.
Oh, okay. Now you played football in high school too, did you?
Yes.
Did you start in football?
No.
Wrestling
was my thing.
Yeah. How did you end up at Liberty University?
So Jeff Lester, every summer, because he wrestled at Liberty, every summer he would take us down to their high school middle school camp. And I've been going to those camps ever since I was middle school. Well, you know, state of West Virginia is growing, but right now during my time of wrestling, it wasn't really sought after. I mean, you know, we're surrounded by Ohio, at the time Virginia, before they went into 7 different classifications. You know, we're surrounded by Pennsylvania, Ohio, Virginia, Maryland. No one really looks into West Virginia unless you're such a standout star that they can't deny you. So Coach Lester would just take us down to Liberty every single year with a combination of, you know, wrestling and religion. Well, I was at Senior Nationals in Virginia Beach, and Coach Castro approached me, and that was kind of it. There was one other school that was interested, but financially and distance-wise, it just didn't make sense. It was a Messiah up in Pennsylvania. They're a D3 school, but they were probably double, triple the cost of Liberty and 6 hours away from me. Yeah. So that just didn't make sense. So I ended up at Liberty because they were the only school that actually recruited me.
Now, Liberty, which used to be Lynchburg Baptist, I guess, and I've never been to Lynchburg, Virginia. I had a buddy that played basketball down there and played baseball when it was Lynchburg. And I actually ended up coaching there, Mike Goad. I don't know whether you've heard that name or not, but he coached there, coached baseball and coached girls basketball for several years, or women's basketball. And Lynchburg had a 10-mile run that was in the fall that was one of the biggest runs in the East, maybe the. I don't know whether they still do that or not, but I was running at that time. But it seemed like every time that thing came up, I had something going on that weekend. Never got to go there. Now, when you were at Shady, It was Triple A when you wrestled, wasn't it?
Yes.
Shady's bounced around a couple of times. Back in the late 90s, they went to Triple A, then back to Double A, then Triple A again. And it looks like they're going to be Triple A now in everything. I mean, they just got reclassified, I guess. But you had 147 wins as a wrestler, and that's nothing to sneeze at there. But Liberty, they also they went from a wrestling alliance to Division One, back to wrestling alliance. Mm-hmm. And how do they work that financially? They don't give scholarships, do they? Or
no, so Liberty's
athletic scholarship.
Yeah, so they don't give an athletic scholarship. So essentially what happens is Liberty has a club sports program, and what they do is they just basically, diverts a lot of the university money and budget it into the entirety of the club sports program. And then the club sports programs, it's their job to divert the money amongst the sports. Some years have been great here lately. And this is all I'll say about it. Here lately, I've kind of felt like the wrestling team's been shafted a little bit when it comes to money. We used to fly 3-4 times a year. Now we're basically getting just buses, and we're having to, the guys are bussing down to Florida right now. They've had to drive out to St. Louis. They're probably going to have to drive out to wherever the national tournament is this year. That's essentially what they do. Wrestling, once again, is always one of those sports, unless you're a Penn State or an Iowa, you're probably not going to make any money. Because anytime we have a home duel, it's free admission, so that's no money right there. And we don't really host tournaments anymore. So hosting tournaments, we used to have the conference and the national duels, and that was a lot of our budget right there. That alleviated a lot of the strain on our budget, and we don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's the club sports is an amazing, amazing program, and they do a good job of diverting the money equally amongst or rationally amongst all the club sports programs the way it should be.
Yeah. A lot of this major universities don't have wrestling because of the Title IX law about equal scholarships for women and men, which I don't have a problem with that or anything. And then some went to club wrestling instead of sponsoring the team itself. But only one school in SEC has it, Missouri, and they wrestle in the Big 12 conference wrestling wise, but they're everything else they're in. So I think there's around 78, 79 Division One schools in the country that's got wrestling, but a lot more Division Two schools. But you run into pretty good competition.
Absolutely. The schedule for Liberty is set up that way. Well, speaking of this real quick, Duke University, from what I heard, they don't even hand out scholarships either. I don't know what it is, but Duke doesn't do scholarships. Duke is essentially a club program, but they wrestle D1. But their club program with how they're funded more so.
Now, who is that?
Duke University.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last I was talking with someone, they don't get scholarships. They are not a school-funded team, but they wrestle Division One. How that works, I have no idea. But they're about the only school that I've ever heard that about. And then you get those types of schools. I mean, Coach Castro is amazing when it comes to the way that he sets up the schedule. So early in the year, we're wrestling top 10 Division III and Division II schools at tournaments. And then, we'll go to Lindenwood University and we'll wrestle Division I schools, whether it be their starters or their walk-ons. At that tournament, we've seen guys like Jaden Cox, Wyatt Hendrickson from Air Force. He wrestled in a few years ago. You just get guys like that that are world medalists and world level athletes. And Castro's like, yep, that's the tournaments that we're going to. And it's because he wants us to get exposed to that level of competition. And I'm telling you, my freshman year going out to that tournament, being that I was 6 months removed from high school, it's a whole different animal.
It's an education.
It's a whole different animal.
Well, the Ivy League schools don't give athletic scholarships, but Cornell is one of the top five teams in the country usually. And they work the grants and aid program. And if you're a poor guy from West Virginia, and you're a pretty good wrestler, they might go after you, but you got to live up there too. But they turn out some pretty good teams for They're the best ones in the Ivy League by far. So it's how you work it, I guess. Now, when you got to Liberty, what did you study?
So I started out as criminal justice, and then I switched to teaching. But the combination for me of today's kids and teachers are always the ones that are wrong. Just today's atmosphere with it. And then COVID hit. I realized I didn't want to be a teacher anymore. I did not want to do it. So I went back to criminal justice, which I'm slowly working on, and running my business all at the same time.
I see. The first time you were an All-American, what year were you in? Were you a sophomore?
That was my junior year.
Junior year?
Yes.
How did that work out? I mean, where was the tournament at?
Allen, Texas.
Okay. And you placed, what, seventh or eighth?
I was seventh that year, yes.
Okay. And what weight class?
174.
But now the second time you were All-American, that's when, during the pandemic, wasn't it?
So, yeah, there were already whispers of it, and we were mid-tournament. My semifinals match, him and his school actually pulled out the apprentice school in Virginia Beach. Since they're technically a government-funded school, they immediately had to pull out. I walked up on stage for my national finals match. You know, we weren't wearing masks. We weren't doing anything. You know, there was just whispers that this is happening. You know, people were starting to pull out. I hugged my coaches. I walked down the steps and someone was handing me a mask. So in the middle of my match, they had made the decision that all masks were going to be starting to be passed around. Really? And it was just like that. Like my world changed, you know, all of our worlds changed. But it was just weird because I walked up those steps to the stage to wrestle the dude from Central Florida. We wrestled. I lost. Hugged my coaches, you know, hey, good career. I'm walking down the steps and one of the event center employees is handing me a mask saying I had to put it on that quick.
Well, I happened to be in Florida at that time and we were afraid that they were going to shut all the airports down. And I told my wife, I said, you know, I'll rent a car, we'll drive home, whatever, because it was getting pretty serious and people were running in and taking toilet paper and everything, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, emptying all the stores. But it was, it got scary. And then even a year later, people just didn't know what to do. And sports, it just, you know, everything was getting cut off or delayed. And it was something else. Now, Jesse Castro, the coach at Liberty, has had great hit. I mean, he's coached at every level. And been successful everywhere. I don't know how old. Tell me a little bit about him.
So he's an amazing coach. He is very much team comes first. He loves his athletes, but at the same time, he does a really, really good job of if you prove yourself. I'm trying to find the best way to say this. If you prove yourself to be a cancer to the team, he's not going to let you around the team. It doesn't matter how good of an athlete you are. He does a very good job at that. He's an amazing guy. He brings in a lot of good coaches. He's very picky on the coaches he brings in. All have to be a certain influence in a way. I mean, I could go on for days and days, but Castro's a great guy. He's got a lot of knowledge. He's got a lot of history. And anytime we go to these tournaments, you know, he still has connections with all these big level coaches. I mean, there's a story where one of our guys threw an Oklahoma State guy onto his back. You know, he looked at John Smith because, you know, Liberty's a club team at this point. So he looked at the great John Smith and you just see him look in the corner. He just hits him with a wink and a little smirk smile. And John came up and hugged him afterwards and just was laughing about it. He said, that was nice. That was nice.
As long as he's been in, you got to develop some good relationships, you know. And I told a story one particular summer. I took some kids up to Pennsylvania and one of the instructors that I roomed with that week was a guy named Joe Say, who ended up taking the Oklahoma State job that year and being the Olympic coach the next year. And by the time I met him, I didn't know who he was. Yeah. I mean, we were in, and great guy. I mean, I became one of his biggest cheerleaders. I thought he was one of the finest people I ever met. But now you qualified for the Nationals four times.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the Division I in Wrestling Alliance, two people in the same weight class from your school can qualify.
Absolutely.
And the NAIA does a little something like that too.
They do the exact same thing.
But you quit wrestling somewhere along the line, didn't you?
So I had my freshman year, and then I had I wasn't really good at being a student. I thought I could just do what I did in high school and just kind of just do everything at last minute and get right by. And it showed. So on top of some other stuff, but I mean, that's a whole longer conversation. Me and the school basically parted ways and I left. But at the time, my granddad also, you know, got cancer. So it was kind of like one of those things of it made sense for me to leave. So I wanted to come back and I thought, you know, the typical story, he would get healed and I would come back. Well, I was gone for 2 years. So all I did was work for 2 years. So that was 2015 through 2017. I was gone.
Now you had you broke your hand sometime or another too during your college career, didn't you?
Yeah, so that was actually my junior year. I was 30 seconds into our conference semifinals. I was 30 seconds in. Kid went for a lat drop. And I sagged my hips and I went to the side to try to catch him on the side. And whenever I went on the side, my hands had sagged all the way down and his hip landed right on top. And I broke, in my hand, I broke the ring finger and the middle finger in my hand, like the metacarpal. So, yeah, broke my bone and broke my hand in four places.
I've been through that experience. I actually broke mine in a takedown tournament one time, and it was a Shady Spring guy that took me down, and I caught myself, and when I popped, I heard it pop, and of course, I actually wrestled another match after that, but it kind of swelled up, and I broke three bones across there. When you came back with a vengeance. I mean, you were the pins leader 1 year for Liberty, weren't you?
My senior year, yeah.
Senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And now after you graduated, or did you graduate?
Haven't yet.
You haven't?
No.
How much more are you like as far as criminal justice?
Probably got about 85%. Business took over. Work took over. And it's just been a struggle to really balance a growing business and right now being the only guy to work it.
Well, did you help with Liberty coaching any after that? Or
I did 1 year afterwards, and then one of the local MMA gyms actually offered me a position. So I'm actually coaching MMA fighters right now.
Really?
We got four or five amateurs, and we got three professionals that I'm coaching.
Now, you decided to go into business. There's got to be a demand.
Yeah.
So what are you into now?
So I'm in lawn care, and I specify specifically in lawn care maintenance. So I'll come in, I'll mow your grass, but then if it's that time of year, I'll fertilize it, overseed it, aerate it, soil testing. Basically, I'm trying to give, you know, because a lot of people's grass is nothing but weeds. So what I do is I try to, like, do as much as possible to give them, like, a pure, green, lush lawn. A lot of guys will start out with mowing, but then what they'll do is they'll get into mini construction. And I'm confident in that, but I just don't think there's really much there at the same time.
So how is business?
It's going. It's booming. I'm busy as can be. I'm working about 6 days a week right now with a strict mowing schedule. Like if one thing goes wrong, mowing schedule's thrown off for, you know, the whole week.
This time of the year?
This time of the year, Christmas time, we're settled down. But I mean, I'm going to go back and next week we're going to pick up. We still got two more weeks of leaf removal, just how many clients and people that we picked up. And then I guess just wait on the snow to see how much snow will come into play this year.
How hard is it to keep people who work for you? I mean, what kind of turnover do you have?
So the turnover for me is a lot, but I haven't fired anyone. That's the amazing part. The turnover for me is because people are like, I have a kid that I trust, you know, he'll drive a truck and trailer, he'll run a mower. I basically have almost put him up to be a crew leader eventually. And, you know, with depending on how big I get, he could have even been a manager. Kid just came to me one day and was like, I think I'm going to lineman school. I can't beat that. Linemen make great money. So why would you not want to, you know, it's one of those things of like turnover rate for me has been fine, but it's always been because people are going and getting other jobs. Jobs that I can't beat right now.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the rest of your employees are seasonal or basically? Or
part-time and seasonal.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys that I have that are part-time are amazing guys. But like one of the guys is like, hey, I work four days and I'm off three. Can I work on a Friday for you? Absolutely. And that's typically what a lot of it is. But then I have another guy who he works for – a print place down there, and he's 4 days on, 3 days off. Or no, 3 days on, 4 days off. So depending on the way his schedule shifts, I either got him for 3 days or I got him for four, you know. So just guys looking to make extra money.
I've been in business myself a few times, and what's the hardest part about being in a legitimate business?
So for me, it's definitely finding the help, because I'd like to have a life sometimes. Here I am saying that I coach MMA fighters, yet I can barely make it to practice because I start work at 7 a.m. and I'm probably pulling back into the shop at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. Just because the work has to be done. And it's not like anyone says, oh, you know, you could just push it to the next day. I'm basically 95% contracted with all my work. So it's legally the work has to get done. So for me, a lot of it's just finding work, finding help, finding good help. Like, yeah. I'd rather have a guy that says he doesn't know how to work that I can teach compared to a guy that's like, oh, yeah, you know, I know how to do this. And then
he doesn't.
Yeah.
Or won't.
I had a guy say that to me one time, and he couldn't even start a push mower. Yeah, he said that he knew how to work a commercial grade zero turn skid steer, all this. Didn't know how to start a push mower. Yeah. So yeah.
What kind of music did you listen to when you were in high school?
So I like a lot of what is considered the outlaw country. I like Waylon, Merle. I like that. I like that old school country, outlaw country.
Well, you're talking my business. I think Merle Haggard was the greatest country singer that ever was. Definitely the writer. But in the MMA, there used to be a guy wrestled for WVU, Greg Jones.
Yes.
And he's probably the greatest wrestler WVU ever had. Three-time national champion, I think. Well, he's got an MMA school in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And they turn out some pretty good athletes. I've got another buddy that teaches mainly karate and judo and things like that in Wilmington, North Carolina, John Maynard. And he's made a living at it for a long time, mm-hmm. and has a lot of regular people that come in. But what constitutes MMA? Or mixed martial arts, fighting. But there's different platforms, aren't there? I mean,
you got UFC, like if you're talking about promotions like UFC, Bellator, one championship overseas, the PFL. Yeah, there's different platforms for it. What constitutes it is it's kind of like if you're a Taekwondo guy, you can fight a kickboxing guy. Kickboxing can go with a pure wrestler, obviously a wrestler with a boxer or jiu-jitsu. But the sport itself is so amazing that it went from whose background is better, like is the wrestler better than the boxer, or boxer better than the kickboxer better than the Muay Thai fighter, to it went to a shift from specialists to everyone had to be an all-around great fighter, you know, whether it be the cardio, the conditioning, the grappling, the striking, to now it's going back to, if you watch, it's kind of like a different shift. It's going back into more specialists, guys that are just so good that they're winning matches and fights with their specialty. I mean, there's a guy out of New Zealand, Israel Adesanya. Dude is a pure kickboxer. Alex Pereira out of Brazil, a pure kickboxer. Then you get guys like Damian Maia from Brazil. He's pure jiu-jitsu. And these guys are winning fights and fighting for world titles. But MMA went from a shift from specialists to pure mixed martial arts, like as the athlete is completely all around good. Now we're seeing a slow trend back into guys that are just pure specialists.
Yeah.
And that's how they fight. If that answers your question.
When I first became aware of MMA, this has been several years ago, there was one guy who was winning, and I can't remember his name now, but he had been a heavyweight wrestler from Syracuse University. And he won the national championship that they had, which it wasn't near as big as it is now.
Yeah.
But he'd won the national championship the first 12 or 13 years, the heavyweight. And they interviewed his wife one time, and he said, "Do you ever worry about him getting injured in a match?" And she said, "No, I worry about him injuring somebody during a match." But he used mainly his wrestling skills. And I knew there for a while, a lot of the guys who had success had good wrestling backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say now, it's kind of going back and forth. Of course, Greg Jones, I'm sure he can teach the wrestling part. What do you, the guys that you train, where do they go fight? I mean, where do they, you're kind of from a little more metropolitan area than what we are, I guess.
Yeah. So there's a promotion out of Myrtle Beach or an hour from Wilmington. And it's Derek Brunson's promotion. So Derek Brunson is a former UFC fighter and he's fought for the world title at 185 a couple times. It's his own promotion that he's started and he's trying to grow and got a good foot in the door with a few guys down there. Johnny Salter with Salty Dog MMA. Salter was a national champion for Lindenwood back in 2007, 2008. Great guy. So we go down there and train with them sometimes and just got our foot in the door with that promotion. A couple of the guys will fight. If it's amateur fights, there's a Titans of the Cage or TOC that is in Northern Virginia. There's a couple promotions in Raleigh, Durham area. Places like that are places that like will go, but it depends. The professionals we send down to Myrtle Beach because they're churning out some good, tough matches. And then the amateurs, we don't send them that far. We'll send them like 2 hours away at most.
How many guys do you train now?
For fighters, 8 or 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do they train every day?
They train every day, yes. We break it up into specific days. We go over a little bit of wrestling every single day because it's a pure jiu-jitsu school. So none of these guys have a real wrestling background. None of these guys have truly trained in it the way that me and others have. So every day we go over a little bit of wrestling and we'll get maybe one or two like play wrestling matches in, just getting a flow in, just like seeing where they're at. But there's probably 1 or 2 days where it's like purely dedicated to wrestling. And now when it comes to MMA though, I'm not teaching them the wrestling that was taught to me or the way that Castro trained me. I'm teaching them a different kind of wrestling when it comes to here's what we can use whenever we're against the cage. Here's what we can use whenever we're in space. On the ground, there's a lot more factors that come into play because in a typical wrestling match, you have a mat with open ends on a gym floor. With MMA wrestling, you have a cage,
yeah,
and that's your stopping point. So it's a different animal. Teaching guys how to not get up, but to get off the cage, stuff like that.
I see. Well, I never thought about that. Where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
I don't know.
You're a young guy.
Reffing is picking up a lot. I'm doing a lot more reffing for wrestling and MMA.
You're doing high school and...
So for refereeing, I've done every level except for the Olympics. I've done almost every level except for a national tournament in college and the Olympics. I've done...
Are you talking about MMA or wrestling?
Wrestling right now. Okay. So I've done freestyle, Greco, college folk style, high school, middle school, peewee. I've done it all. Now it's, since I've done it all, I'm slowly climbing the ladders of getting more and more, higher matches when it comes to wrestling. And just the last 2 years, I've done a couple MMA fights, like reffing them. So for 10, if I can make a living off being a referee, I would. And that's kind of something I've thought about. But the business, I'm still going to be running the business in 10 years. That's something I've put so much time and effort into. I feel like just to put all that time and effort just to completely close it down would be kind of foolish, especially if I can get it self-running. Why would I shut something down if it can be self-sufficient?
Yeah. I refereed for 28 years in high school and junior high, middle school. But at the time... of course, I became a class one official and stuff, but at the time I was coaching too. So
yeah,
it kind of hurt me in the wrestling part because I wasn't getting some of the tournaments because I was wrestling in them, you know,
exactly,
and those kind of things. So it made a little bit more, but I really, for many years, I really loved the most competitive matches, the ones that were going to be tight and close. And I look forward to doing it. And that was weird. Some people, man, I don't want to do that one. But for the first 25 years, I never heard anything from the stands. They say if you get rabbit ears, you might as well get out.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I never heard any pro or anti or anything. You know, now afterwards, somebody might come up and say, "Oh, you suck," you know, whatever. But You know, those are the things you get. But I was one of those guys too. And you, when I came off the mat, whether the crowd agreed with it or not, I knew whether I did a good job or a bad job.
Exactly.
And it was, that's all I needed to, you know, I knew, maybe I should have done a little bit more here, or man, I did a good call on that one, you know, whatever. But I'm glad you like it. I hope you stay in it. I don't know whether you can make a living at it or not.
Well, it depends on how I go. I know that there's some guys on the MMA side that's all they do, and they make good livings with it. The only reason I started doing that a couple years ago is because one of the guys that we know from one of those promotions in Myrtle Beach, he's a referee in the UFC. He's like early prelims right now. So that's how I started. He talked me into it. So that's how I've kind of started to think about it. Is like, well, because he's like, oh, I only started 10 years ago. He's 45, 47. So I was like, man, if I get another 10 years start ahead of you, where could I be in 20 years when sure. I'm his age?
If you continue to improve and the game will probably change a lot. You know, the rules change and those kind of things.
Every single year. Yeah. And the one thing that I hate about MMA refing is that every state right now has a different athletic board.
Commission
when it comes to rules and whatnot. The good thing about wrestling is that every year, whenever it changes, it typically changes for the whole country. Now, obviously, states, areas, culturally,
yeah,
it depends on what reffing association you get. And it goes down to the association. And I feel pretty confident I'm in a good refereeing association. I mean, we talk at least once a week. On my way over here this morning, I was calling one of my buddies. He is on his way up to Michigan to be with his family. Well, he referees, so his family has ties to the referees up there, so he's going to go and referee up in Michigan this year. He went and got certified in Michigan just so he could referee for the 2 weekends that he's up there visiting. You know, small stuff like that. But, like, last year he came back, he's like, man, the culture is just so different here. And, you know, that's just how we are. We're always in constant communication. Hey, what'd you see? Okay, so you saw that. How did you call that? Where was, like, small stuff? Where were you at when you called that? Were you behind them? Were you on the side? Were you, like, in front at their head? Like, what was your angle for you to call that? We go pretty in-depth when it comes to our referee meetings.
That's good. That's great.
Because positioning means everything in wrestling.
Yeah. When we were wrestling in Huntington at the SAZs one time, and they had Wade Shawless came in. And Wade Shawless had been not only one of the best wrestlers in the world, he was one of the best referees in the world mm-hmm. later. And he came in and refereed there, and he had a little clinic in between the rounds. And some of the things he said, you know, how to position, how to look for things, it was just like opened up your whole way of thinking. I mean, the guy was really impressive. He'd been at every level, and he was really something. But you once said that faith in God, it helped me stay a good person when I had every reason not to be. You still feel that way?
I do. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't bitter a lot of days. I mean, everything that my family's went through, everything that I've went through. I have every reason to shut down, seclude myself, and just be bitter towards the world. Yet, I don't like that. I was wrestling with O'Kill yesterday, and I was talking with David Vincent, and I was like, I don't care what it is. Like, I could wrestle and just pour into different high schools and pour into kids and just talk to them the way that, you know, a lot of the college athletes that I looked up to whenever I was their age. None of them could even say a word to me, but I know for, like, maybe, just maybe, I'll reach one of those kids. And by doing that and helping and giving back, I mean, I'm not going to take any of the money with me whenever I die. So giving back any way I can, it's like, hey, do you need $20 in gas? I'll give you $20 in gas, like, just to get you home. Like, you forgot your wallet? Here's some money. Get home. Like, stuff like that. I still do believe in that, because if I didn't have my faith, I really feel like I'd be a really, really horrible person. And I would play victim. I would just probably look for every excuse just to be the victim and poor old pity me. And that's not how I want to live my life. I don't want no one to pity me. I've lived a good life. It's been a hard life. Life is hard, but I don't want anyone to pity me.
Well, keep that attitude. You'll be fine. And I, Cody, I appreciate you coming by and talking to us, and good luck with your refereeing and your business. And anytime you want to come back, we'd be glad to have you.
I'll let you know every time I'm back in town. I enjoy this.
Okay. Anybody else out there that would like to be on our program, we will get you on here, and just hit me up at awbennett50@gmail.com. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And this is Wayne Bennett. God bless you.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory.